From her column, Ask Joey, in the Sacramento News and Review, Joey Garcia has been our region's confidant, conscience, and for those of us seeking her advice, clairvoyant, asking ourselves, how did she know that? Celebrating her 20th year of dispensing wisdom, and sometimes a well-placed kick in the butt to her readership, Joey joins us to tell her story and the lessons she has learned sharing her truth, next on Studio Sacramento.
At Five Star Bank, we create thoughtful solutions to help the Capital Region thrive, from economic development and education to public health and safety, issues that are vitally important to Sacramento's prosperity. We're proud to be part of the conversation and hope you'll join in.
Joey, how do you define yourself?
Oh my goodness, do I have to define myself? I think that would be my question. I think of myself not so much as a woman or as a Caribbean woman or a Sacramentan, but as a person who desires nothing more than to help others.
Wow. I got to ask you something. I was reading something that you wrote, and you said, when people reach the end of their lives and are asked what matters most, one answer persists: relationships. Where did that come from?
Well, you know, it didn't start with me. I think that's almost a classic belief that comes out of people who worked in hospice, right? And it's true that we care more about who we connected with or failed to connect with in our lives than we do about what sort of toys we've accumulated over our lifetime.
And when people come to you through your column, through all of your other work out in the community, what are they usually questing for?
I think a lot of people are looking for love, acceptance, and the passion to follow their call. Most of us get a call to our purpose in life, and we don't follow through because it doesn't seem like it's big enough or important enough, or maybe it seems too big, right? So I think most people are looking for those things, and they don't realize that they have the power inside themselves to see love in a different way. When they're yearning for love, they're yearning for romantic love. One of the things I like to say to people is that the world can be your soulmate. Don't try to look for your soulmate in one person. What is out there in this incredible world we have that you can love, that is looking for your love right now?
And let's focus on that for a second. On people are always looking for a soulmate in a single individual.
Yes.
And why do so many of us make that mistake?
I think that our idea of what it means to be human is limited. So we're going to limit then our capacity to love. And one way to do that is to focus on a single person instead of how big can I go with this love that I have inside me to share. If we were people who lived out of love, we would be in a very different world right now.
How did you come to this calling? You talked about people's callings. How did you come to yours?
Stumbling, falling on my face, all of the wrong ways. But, you know, I think that I'm someone who knew who I was at a very young age, and in part because I had this grandmother, and comes from a line of women prior to her, who were healers, who were what we call granny healers in Belize. So the herbalist that you went to because you had a sore throat or a fever, or a woman in your neighborhood who was just wise and knew the answers to life's questions. So coming from that lineage inspired me to believe that I had that possibility. But I was also in the framework of a traditional religion and a traditional society here in the United States, because we had immigrated by this time from Belize. This traditional society, this traditional religion, didn't believe in the power of a single person to change things.
Yeah. And Let's come back to this. Yeah. You were born in Belize.
So. I was, yeah.
And
I'm an immigrant.
Ooh.
I know.
And you have a passion for Belize with a nonprofit that you're doing work with back there in that country. Okay. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the nonprofit is called Rise Up Belize. I started it about 15 years ago. And initially, the idea was to help train Belizean teachers. So I would bring teachers from Sacramento to Belize, and we put on free professional development workshops for teachers in Belize. And that evolved into a program that is now a teen leadership program. So I select teenage girls here in Sacramento, put them through a rather rigorous training process and leadership skills and curriculum development and classroom management. I take them to Belize and they put on a summer school for children in Belize. So it's a girls' leadership program with this project management component. So they're fully in charge of the summer school, which is for 60 to 100 little kids. So I've got two teenage girls per classroom, and chaperones are on site, but the girls are completely in charge. And as you know, when they come out of the program, they say, once you have gone to a developing country and you're fully in charge of kids in a school, you pretty much realize you can do anything. So they're really transformed.
What inspired you to do this in the first place?
Well, initially, when I was doing the teacher training program, I had gone to Belize and was visiting my cousin. I had to deal with some paperwork, and we were at the diocese in Belize to deal with that paperwork. And the bishop signed my paperwork, and being a good girl, I said, well, if there's anything I can do for you, you just let me know. And he turned around and he said, well, you can put on a teacher training program for me. And I thought, I was waiting for him to laugh. I thought, you're out of your mind. That's like somebody's full-time job. And he didn't laugh. And I thought, my cousin and I looked at each other. We started laughing and he still didn't laugh. And he was serious.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, I'm not doing this. You know, this is crazy. That's a lot of work. Well, 2 years later, I happened to run into him again, except it was at a funeral and he was sitting in front of us. And I said to a relative, who is that man? He looks familiar. And my relative says, that's the bishop. And I thought, oh, you know, here it is.
Were you trying to like move out the back?
So he remembered me and we got together and he said, well, great. Can you do this? I believe he said like April. And I said, well, it's February. And he was just giving me a few months. He goes, you're an American, you can do anything, you know? Okay, so I came back and I scrambled and I put that first one together. So that's how it started. And then as I got there, I thought the children in Belize really need help. And I saw children walking to school, not with a backpack, but with what we have banned here, those plastic garbage bags with their books in them. And I saw this little boy, the books fell out the bottom of that plastic bag he had on his back and into a drainage area, which is sort of like a latrine. And he started crying, and I thought, he should not have to go through this. So when we started, we made sure every child who attended our programs also got a backpack with school supplies.
And what's the impact that your programs had on the people you're trying to help?
Oh, thank you. It's been amazing, really, to see these young people. Children in Belize have the privilege of seeing these teenagers come to teach them from the United States, so that alone is transformative. We've seen leaps in their academic success. They weren't even really getting a strong education, so they didn't know much of what, say, a child here in second or third grade would know about geography or any other subject. So we've seen those academic leaps and an excitement for education that they didn't have before. And the teachers in Belize tell us they are much improved in their behavior in the classroom.
Oh, that's
always
great.
So that's huge.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm just curious, for the work that you do today, yeah, what prepared you in your life experience to advise people on all sorts of challenges?
I think the fact that I went through a lot of trauma in my life, and I was willing to keep going and try to find out how I could heal. I think one of the qualities that I have is curiosity. And I think in many times, curiosity kept me going or kept me alive. I wanted to know what would happen. So even when I was at the end of my rope, so to speak, right, to use a cliche. I felt like, but I want to know what's going to happen tomorrow. I want to believe that something better can happen for me. So I grew up with a great deal of violence in my early childhood, both directed at me and other people that I was living with. And it was a strange juxtaposition of growing up around that violence and then at the same time, using herbal remedies and yoga and prayer and all these wonderful healing practices. So I think what prepared me was that willingness to keep growing and to understand that it's important not to be locked into any one belief system, but rather to open up to the possibility of anything as long as what I'm doing isn't harming anyone and that it is serving the best of who I am and what the world could be.
What do you think attracts people to your column?
Hopefully that they can find a deeper truth there. Yeah, that I think advice columns and conversations and spirituality tends to be superficial. And what they can find at the column, if they're willing, is what's underneath that and underneath that and underneath that.
How do you find most of those things related to spirituality and that sort of thing superficial? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, for example, I could light sage, and that's a practice that people have, right? To clear the air, or light incense, let's say, right? To clear the air, and people say get rid of bad energy, right? But I don't have to destroy a plant. I don't have to burn a plant in order to shift the energy, right? I'm the one seeing the energy as negative or bad. So that shift can happen inside of me.
Okay.
Right? Not out there. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm the one who needs a new vision of the energy in the room.
Okay. So I want to tell you, as a longtime reader of your column,
yes.
I want to know how typical I am. So I read your column, I listen to the stories. Sometimes they're very compelling to me in terms of things that have affected me, sometimes not. Yeah. But there are two things that about me that, sort of are inspired by your column. Number one is, I have columns of yours that I've cut out and saved over the years.
Thank you.
And so,
yeah.
They're in a drawer or they're in a book or they're in something like that. And the second is that I'm always stunned by sometimes you zig, where we expect you to zag, and you. When I expect you to put your arm around the person writing in, you kind of kick them in the butt.
Well, I really believe that my joke is that we need a backbone, right? And so that's that capacity to stand up strong. And I do want to be compassionate toward people, but I think a lot of times what happens is people bond wound to wound. Oh, poor baby. Oh, you poor thing. When really that person needs to get up and get going and keep going, right? Because if they sit any longer in that, oh, poor baby, they're not going to transform, and that's my concern, right? And again, see, I'm not coming out of psychology. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not trained in any of those capacities.
You're not credentialed in...
That's right. I'm just, what we used to have in every neighborhood, a wise woman who had the house at the corner near the field and had the dog and the cat and lots of green plants in her yard. That would be me. So I'm here to listen, to learn, and to share.
What gifts does the work give you?
Oh, well, that's very touching for me to think of. The gift that the work gives me primarily, I think, is that what I have been through has been worthwhile, because not only have I grown, but I can serve others with the suffering that I've experienced.
And as you think back over 20 years of columns and all of the other work that's come along the way, what story or what reach out from someone affected you most?
One of the ones that comes to me is, because it's so frequent, is is it a woman writing in about, you know, so frequent, the perfect date and then the guy disappeared, you know, and what happened? I remember my response, which I still like to this day, was life or death probably. You know, what I mean is, you know, death meaning, you know, he decided it wasn't for him and didn't have enough of a backbone to say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not interested and good luck to you, right? Just disappeared. Or life, he met someone else. So the death in the more metaphoric or symbolic sense, a letting go, a release of what had been, and life as in something new came along, someone new came along and distracted him, and there he went. But we are so afraid of thinking of letting go or death in this American culture, and I think it's very important to realize that that's just a part of life.
Do you ever, when responding to someone who's reaching out for your help, communicate something back to them and then look at it and say, oh my gosh, I should take that advice?
Well, yes, of course. And you know, people say that sometimes, who longtime readers say that they don't even read the question anymore, they just read the answer because it's going to relate to something in their life. I feel the same way. But one of the funny things for me about the column is when I get a question, I think, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I think that's the perfect place to be, because then I just say, well, you know, God, universe, speak through me. Let this wisdom come through. Whatever this person needs to hear, let it be so, you know. Yeah.
In your experience, why is it that if everyone is seeking love, we seem to have so many misconnections, regardless of gender, race, orientation, or anything else? Why do human beings struggle with this so much?
Well, I think, you know, we're indoctrinated by fairy tales. that has a huge effect on us, I think. But why are there misconnections? Because they're not misconnections so much as just other experiences on the journey that lead us to where we're supposed to go. I think once we open up, we can see the value in that interaction. It was practice for what is yet to come. And sometimes the practice is just learning that not everybody is going to be the right romantic partner, but everybody is, everyone is our soulmate, right? In that sense of, we can all connect with each other's soul. What a person is looking for, and this is what's confusing, is they're looking for their ego mate. That's what they really need.
Hold on, slow down.
Yes, yes,
their
yes.
Their ego mate, what is that?
Well, okay. Our ego is our personality, right? With the self we show to the world. We need the person who can deal with that ego. We don't need it. Everybody's soul gets along with everybody else's soul. But our egos, that's where we have the trouble, right?
Interesting.
Yes, that's where we bounce up against each other and we get angry and frustrated and humiliated. So if we were oriented toward looking for the person who can deal with us at our best and worst, the ego mate, then relationships would be so much easier.
Well, let's talk about something that's maybe as a tool to help relationships easier. Yeah. You recently published a book.
That's right.
When Your Heart Breaks, It's Opening to Love, Healing and Finding Love, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And tell us what inspired you to do this book now.
So many people have asked me to come out with a book of my columns on particular topics, and that was one of the topics that was of the greatest concern. How do I get over a heartbreak? How do I get over a divorce or an affair? How do I keep my heart open through these kinds of traumas, you know, these painful experiences in life? So I decided to compile those columns on that topic and self-publish a book. And the title just came to me, and I thought, that is so perfect, right? Because if we are going through a difficulty in a good way, then yes, we are broken open by it. We are broken open by it, which means we are bigger than we were before, right? We are open to all possibilities. So it's been a joy, and I've heard wonderful things from people who have read the book, and that's exciting for me.
Well, give us some tips. So if we are, we'll start with looking for love, okay? If we're looking for love,
yeah.
How does one get in the right place or the right frame of existence in order to be able to find what they're seeking?
Well, you know, what kind of love are we talking about? Are we talking about romantic love?
Or that's what usually...
Yeah, that's what people are looking for. But I would say to start with, maybe agape love, right? That love of, like I said, that soulmate love, where every experience, every person I pass, I try to love them. Do I succeed? No, I do not. You know, sometimes I get irritated, annoyed, and wonder, what the heck? What are you doing? Why are you driving like that? But if we start with that openness to loving the random stranger, then it's much easier to love the person that we are here to spend some time with. And I won't say the rest of our life, because that's not true for everyone either these days, but at least a chunk of our life with. Yeah.
And what about if we're coming out of what we would call a bad relationship,
yeah,
and in the process of healing? Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for those folks?
So for people that are breaking up and finding something to get themselves out of that, the very first thing is to be still. You know, people want to rush right out and find someone to fill that empty space. And I think it's important to feel the feelings and to know that feelings are transient. They don't last forever, right? So those uncomfortable, unhappy feelings, that depression, that anger, confusion, that's going to pass. So sit with that. Let it pass. It's very important also to trust the process, meaning that, you know, once those difficult emotions have passed, what have I learned from the experience to make me a better person, a better human being, a better friend, a better partner, a better lover? What have I learned? And then integrating that. So it's not always, maybe someone broke up with me and left me, but I still have something that I need to learn from that experience. It's not that I did something bad. It's not that I should feel guilty, but what was true? Sometimes for people, and I find this happens a lot, Scott, they denied that little voice of intuition that told them that the breakup was coming, or that they should have broken up, or it wasn't working. And so if the thing they get out of it is the awareness of the denial, that's good.
Interesting. I'm curious,
yes,
what's the best advice you've ever gotten?
Let's see. I think, gosh, I can't think of the best advice, but what comes to me is a line from a poem by Rilke, and it's, just keep going. No feeling is final. Don't let yourself lose me.
Wow.
And I just think, yes, yes, just keep going. So that's what I try to do. I try to just keep going. I try to remember that no feeling is final, and never to lose that divine, that awareness of that divine presence that exists in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has over the 20 years that, mm-hmm, you've been doing the column, have the nature of the questions at all evolved or shifted?
Yeah, you know, in the beginning, they were very, very focused on religion, spirituality, parapsychology, and now they've become more just seriously quite relationship-based, you know. There's been far more parenting questions that have come in, and far more questions from teenagers.
Yeah, well, that's a big piece of your work, which is interesting. You know, I want to just point out that you've been a partner with the News and Review for a number of years.
Yes.
You know, this is, you know, 20th century media, you know, newsprint and all of that.
Yes.
But you have quite a following among young people, teenagers. Where does that come from?
Well, I think that they appreciate that I tell them the truth, even if the truth is going to sting. Even if the truth seems brutal, they know they can trust me, that I'm not going to lie to them. And I think we lie to teenagers too often in our culture. And we need to stop that. We need to get over it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you've done some work on advising parents on how to deal and communicate with their teenagers.
That's right.
Help us out. Help us out. Tell us something.
I think one of the things that happens for parents most often is they fail to listen well, and listen deeply, right? So listening is so essential, and that's listening non-judgmentally. So pulling back from the fear that what's happening to my kid. One of the prime examples is, you know, you ask your daughter to open up to you. She opens up and she starts, let's say, sharing a concern she has, maybe about a boy. Let's say she says, you know, I'm really worried about Ben. I think he's smoking pot, and you know what? I think he's interested in trying other drugs, and he seems really depressed. And the parent says, You're smoking, are you smoking pot? Are you, instead of, oh, you're worried about your friend, see? So parents jump over into panic over nothing. And so kids say, well, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with that, I'm not even going to confide. Or if they have to, if the teen has to talk about something difficult, they're worried about disappointing the parents. Be a parent for whom that kid will never be worried about disappointing you, but always know they can tell you about something and you'll work it out together.
And we're going to leave it there. The book is When Your Heart Breaks, It's Opening to Love. Joey Garcia, thank you so much, and wishing you another successful 20 years.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syfax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
At Five Star Bank, we create thoughtful solutions to help the Capital Region thrive, from economic development and education to public health and safety, issues that are vitally important to Sacramento's prosperity. We're proud to be part of the conversation and hope you'll join in.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.